All right, everybody, here we are for Now Showing with Mike and Wayne, week 15. We've made it 15 weeks. We're going strong here, I think. I don't know. We're enjoying doing it. We're going to keep the horror movie theme going. We're going to do zombie movies this week.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is soon at hand.
All right, we're going to start with some thriller. Interesting. Which was tied into the zombie videos that I made for the Zombie Monster Jam truck, I like to point out. And I once got to make a video, side note, using all Romero footage and other zombie movie footage and thriller footage, which never saw the light of day. But it was probably the most fun thing I ever got to work on.
Weren't we supposed to do something with a graveyard?
There was a graveyard in Pittsburgh, because that's where Romero's from, and that's where this whole franchise started. We were supposed to do a showing of Night of the Living Dead, and there was going to be, like, Duhan was supposed to be there, signing autographs and stuff, and it never. That's why I made the video. And apparently it never happened. The video never saw the light of day. I was pretty disappointed by that. Regardless, it was fun to work on, and it's fun because I'm a huge horror movie fan, and I'm a huge zombie movie fan, so let's get started here. Zombie movies have been around for the last 40, 50 years, but they mainly got their start. I know there was some before, but they made it into the mainstream for the first time, we'll say, in 1968, when a young director, George A. Romero, had an idea to make a zombie film that was more of a allegory towards society than just a zombie film. It starred Dwayne Jones. So it was an African-American man as the lead in a horror film, which was uncommon back then. Unless it was like a black-directed, produced film. You know, this was a white guy producing this film, directing this film, and he put a black guy in the lead because he had something to say. And You know, at the time when it was made, you could see people probably missing the point maybe a little bit and just enjoying the movie for what it is. And that's what films are supposed to be. They're supposed to be fun to go to. But he made that casting choice for a reason and kind of set up history for zombie films to kind of go and start from there and then move their way up.
Yeah, you want to talk about iconic, in just the sense that I don't really consider this a gory type. This is a psychological just head mess for me, just with the sound and just the long shots of just the slow moving corpses and whatnot. It just, I think because it's black and white, it contributes to that just unease for me of just, just shivers thinking about it right now because how old were you when you first saw this movie? Because I was less than 10.
Okay, see, and I probably had seen bits and pieces of it over time, but when I really sat down and enjoyed it for the first time, I was older. I was probably a teenager already. I saw it before I saw the sequel. I think that's probably why I watched it again, but I guess I don't remember as much as it is from my childhood, which I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure I've seen it, but it just didn't hit a chord back then.
I saw it on one of the free channels, like Channel 44 or something, on just regular TV in October around Halloween time. And I had the genius idea to watch it right before bed for some reason. And obviously mom and dad were not paying attention or weren't aware of what I was doing, but I literally could not sleep or be in a room that wasn't well lit for at least a month.
I mean, like, and it's crazy because it is very eerie. It's very scary. But if you look at it and you compare it to movies to today, like, it doesn't look like it should be that creepy and eerie. But he shot it at night, which helps because then you could hide a lot of the zombie effects and stuff like that. And let's be honest, it wasn't until 78 when he made Dawn that he got a little more creative with the zombies.
Right.
In 68, it was basically just people painted up a little whiter to make them look dead. Yeah, it was just plain makeup.
And the darkness around the eyes. And I mean, really, it wasn't even the greatest acting either, mm-hmm. but just that panic of having to barricade yourself and, oh God, they're through the barricade to the basement.
Yes.
You know,
Well, and I think too, what really made this movie shine, not only was you hit that midnight audience, you know, it's at the drive-ins in 1968, they get to go see a scary movie. But as filmmakers in the 60s and 70s, I'm sure when the likes of John Carpenter and Wes Craven and Steven Spielberg, when they see a movie like Night of the Living Dead, it shows you what you can do with very little. And the budget on that movie was a shoestring budget. I had it up here. I think it was $114,000. Yeah, $114,000 was the budget. So people just think about that and what budgets are today. Even on budgets on independent films today are more than double that usually. So
absolutely,
you're thinking this is a movie. This guy basically made this movie on his own, cast unknown people in it. No one famous is in it. Dwayne Jones was a teacher. And it was funny because he would actually show this movie to like his kids and his classes and stuff. And they'd be like, oh, my God, that's you. Like, yep, I was an actor once. And it's just incredible. When you look at it, it's incredible what they were able to do with this movie and how it stood the test of time. It was put into the Library of Congress in 1999 for the preservation of National Film Registry as a film deemed culturally, historically, aesthetically significant. So that's pretty big on a low-budget $114,000 movie that if you go today domestically, the film grossed $12 million domestically and $18 million internationally. So just, you know, look at its budget, and it killed it at the box office when you base it on how much money it cost. 250 times its budget, as it says.
One of the most iconic, it's a little upsetting to me that this dialogue, this piece of dialogue does not hold up really anymore, like in mainstream, but... They're coming to get you, Barbara. Just the brother antagonizing the sister when they're in the graveyard.
Exactly. And it's funny because that's how I started the video that I made. That was the opening line from that video because I'm like, this is perfect. And we're going to get to Dawn of the Dead in a minute here, but that one also had a very classic line that's repeated over and over again. But along with Night 2, what I love about this movie is at some point, I can't really find exactly what happened, but the copyright on this movie like lapsed. No one picked it up, so it's free. That's why when you see a horror movie in a movie, chances are, especially if it's a lower budget movie, it's going to be Night of the Living Dead because they don't have to pay anything for it. And if you want to stream this movie, I don't believe it's on Netflix, but it's on like HBO Max, it's on Hulu, it's on Shudder, it's on Amazon Prime, it's on Tubi, it's everywhere because they can all stream it for free and not have to pay any royalties to it, which kind of sucks for the Romero family members, but... You know, it just was one of those things that somehow, some way, someone messed that up, and now it's basically the free source movie that we all have to do with what we want.
Now, have you seen the 1990? I guess it's a remake by Tom Savini.
Yes, I did. I've seen the remake. I like the remake. I haven't seen it in a while. I actually just ordered it recently on Blu-ray because I'd like to rewatch it. And I liked it when I was, that was probably, what's funny is I didn't see this one probably fully till I got older. I probably saw the remake first because the remake came out in 1990 and that was about the time that I was watching, all the B horror movies that I would see on TV. And that was one of them. It stars Tony Todd in the Dwayne Jones role.
I was going to say Candyman, right?
Yep. Savini's effects are great. I mean, that's what he's known for. We'll talk a little bit more about him when we talk Dawn of the Dead, because he was kind of involved for the creation of that movie and Day, and plenty of other horror films in the 80s, and of course his own in Night of the Living Dead. I like the remake. It's kind of gained a cult status, I think, since it's had a couple Blu-ray releases. People have fallen more in love with it. And that's the thing, like, it's nice to have an original movie you can watch and also have a remake that's a little more modern looking that you can watch that still... hits on a lot of the same social economic issues that the first one brought up.
Right, because like just jumping on remakes really quick, not to derail our topic of conversation, but when they made Psycho, obviously classic, mm-hmm. Churchill, jeez. I don't know Winston Churchill in movies.
He hit himself as Alfred Hitchcock. He's the same person.
Yeah. Alfred Hitchcock, Churchill, you can see where I'm going.
Fat British guys, yeah, basically.
Yeah, you know, basically the same guy. But then they remade Psycho shot for shot.
Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn is in it. It's the director of Good Will Hunting, who I'm drawing a blank on his name at the moment, but whatever. We're not here to talk about Psycho.
Anyway, it's nice that a remake can stand on its own, but also pays homage to its original predecessor.
And
that's the point I was trying to make.
Yes.
And I said I wasn't going to derail the conversation, and I totally have. So let's get back on...
Well, and I will comment on this, like, too. And that's what was good about Night of the Living Dead, is while they kept the same theme to the movie, he kind of did his own thing. Whereas Psycho, he wanted to pay so much respect to it that it was a shot-for-shot remake, which with a few little additions in there. And it just, at the point when you're watching Psycho, it just, you're thinking to yourself, like, why am I watching this when I could just watch the classic original? Night of the Living Dead, the remake, does not make you feel that way. So, Night of the Living Dead comes out. It's successful. Lots of midnight showings. Really kind of ingrained in society. Like I said, it deals with a lot of social issues that were happening at the time and, unfortunately, are still happening in a lot of places. I feel like we talk about this every week, but that's just kind of where we're at in society. So, 10 years later...
Well, until things start changing, you know? We're going to keep talking about it every time there's a chance to bring it up.
Exactly, exactly. So, 10 years later, George Romero gets a chance to make another zombie movie, and it is a sequel to Night of the Living Dead in the sense that it takes place in the same world, but all the characters are different. So it's not like, it's one of those things you don't have to actually watch Night of the Living Dead to watch Dawn of the Dead. I think you should, because they're both classics. Dawn of the Dead is, so I watched Night first, just to kind of get it back in my brain, and then I watched Dawn of the Dead for the first time, probably about 20 years ago, I would say, and I loved it. It was...
Absolutely.
Seriously, like, it became one of my favorite horror films, like, the moment I saw it. From the production design, from the zombies, from the actors, from Ken Forhey, who's the main protagonist in this movie, to Tom Savini as one of the biker gang guys, and also the special effects guy in this movie, to the score by Dario Argento, which is fantastic. Argento, normally, he's a director in Italy, but he's friends with the Romeros, and did the music for this movie. It's amazing. The soundtrack is spectacular. The tension in this movie, I always tell people, like, if you're not into it, you're going to find it boring. Because there are probably an hour where, like, not a lot is happening action-wise. But the music, anytime the music picks up, you're just like, you're on the edge of your seat. You're waiting for what's going to happen next.
Exactly. You know, that passage of time that I don't want to call it a montage, but just how they pass the time and how their little daily activities through the mall and whatnot.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to touch on when you said tension, the elevator scene. And
oh, God.
I know
God.
Exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Just, holy shit, you know, whoa.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so, the elevator scene, the scene towards the end with Ken Forey, which I won't spoil anything just in case people haven't seen it. I mean, I should spoil it, but I love this movie so much that if you haven't seen it, I want you to watch it without being spoiled for you.
You know, when I'm being chased by a zombie, I'm probably going to stop and check my blood pressure as well, just because, you know, I want it to be healthy. One of my favorite scenes. It's like, what is this going to do?
It's,
again, if you don't know what we're talking about, check this movie out. You'll see it and be like, ah, I see what they're talking about.
Yes, yes. It's so good. This is probably the time, too, though, that we started having movies where you would actually notice the zombies, and there'd be specific zombies that people would become fans of. And that happened in this movie. It happened in the sequels. It happened in the constant ripoffs of Romero. There are plenty of other movies that are zombie movies that are just like his movies that they did over in Italy, they did over in France, they did over here in America, because he was so revolutionary in the zombie genre that people wanted to emulate him. And they did it pretty quickly and pretty, you know, fast. Those movies, in the horror industry, when something becomes popular, 9 million people do it the next day because they want to be right there. So you had a lot of ripoffs of these movies, but his still stands to be one of, and this is, again, in my opinion, one of the best zombie movies ever made, both with Dawn and Night. So two of the best zombie movies ever made. And I just
now,
think
I'm
they're fantastic.
Now, I'm going to ask you about the 2006 remake or... Yeah, remake.
2004. Yeah, it was 2004.
Excuse me, sorry.
Two.
What did you think of this one? Because this is actually one of the first, other than Night, this is the first zombie movie that I think I watched, or I sought out. Like, I didn't know, honestly, that the original Dawn of the Dead existed when I saw...
Okay.
When I saw Dawn of the Dead 2004 version, I didn't know there was a 1978 version of this. So,
okay.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on this one, because we know that the remake of Night held up and was very good. So,
this movie is it. So when I saw this movie, I really liked this movie, and I still do. Like, I really like it. It's a good movie. It's a good zombie movie. I love James Gunn, who wrote it. At the time, this was Zack Snyder's like first big budget movie, and we were still fans of him. So it was a solid flick. It was very fun. It's very entertaining. It's kind of a punch in your mouth type movie, which is completely, if you've seen the original, is completely different than the original 1978 movie. And
Would you consider that one more of a slow burn?
Yes. Oh, totally, totally. I think most of Romero's horror films are slow burns, and I think those two are no exception. They're definitely slow burns. Maybe you can argue that Day of the Dead isn't as much of a slow burn, but even that one to an extent. This one, the remake, was really good. I really enjoyed it. I resent it when people say it's better than the original. And I feel like we live in a society where that's the consensus. Most people just talk about that movie. And every time someone's like, oh, did you see that Dawn of the Dead? I always want to be like, yeah, but did you see the original? Because to me, it's just so much better. But they did a really good job with that remake. And it does stand on its own. I kind of wish we would have got a direct sequel from that. Once we get to Day, we'll talk about what they tried to do to remake that movie. But yeah, so I don't know. I liked it, Wayne. I know you. I'm assuming you obviously really liked it since you sought out the original afterwards.
Anytime I can get some Ving Rhames in my life, I'm happy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ving Rhames is great. The cast is fantastic. That's for sure. Great cast.
I love that Ty Burrell plays a character that is so unlike his modern family character.
Yes,
it's just. And obviously, you've got the Pat Boone's. Get up and get you down with the sickness.
Yeah,
and does that whole album there. But honestly, I when we're comparing things, I don't think that you can. All right, you can compare Night of the Living Dead to its remake. Mm-hmm. This one, these are so different. You know, same premise, obviously, but you know, just the way the films exist, and like we talked about Romero's being. You know, slow burn, where his film, you scare yourself just because you're thinking and anticipating and planning and get prepared for it. With the Snyder version in 2004, it's in your face and it is attempting to push the action and push the horror. And
well,
I'm feeding off of what you said with people saying that, you know, this one is better. It's like, you can't compare it. Just enjoy, and like, I don't know, I guess I'm being a little bit defensive of the 78 version because it is so good, and like you said,
well, the 2004 version is a product of its time. The 2000 horror films are not known for being very good. This is one that stands out because it was way and above better than most of the horror films from that time period, and it did what they all tried to do, which was to be louder, bigger, bloodier. It did it so much better than the rest of, you know, House of Wax or 13 Ghost or Ghost Ship. And there's just countless movies from back then that people thought were that they've kind of become classics. Like 13 Ghost and Ghost Ship are classics. And I put quotes here because there were no good horror movies in the early 2000s. So we kind of had to grab onto what we had. And that was all we got. We had, like, Ghost Ship has a great opening scene. Then the rest of the movie's terrible. 13 Ghost has some really cool special effects, but the story's not very good. So it's just, when Dawn of the Dead comes out, you're like, wow, it's got a good story. It's got great characters. It's got great violence. It's very fast paced. Man, it punches you in the mouth in the beginning of that movie. She's getting home from work, Sarah Polley, and she's getting ready to go to bed. And then the zombie apocalypse starts and it doesn't stop until the end, until the credits roll, basically. And even then there's an extra bonus scene. So it's just kind of relentless from beginning to end.
Did not know that Ken Foray has a cameo in the 2004 version.
He is the guy on. He says his same line, which I want to say this line because it's great from Dawn of the Dead. He says, my grandfather always said, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. And that's how he quotes it in Dawn of the Dead. And then in the remake, he's a preacher on TV, and he's like, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. And that's how that happens. Yeah. So it was great that they got him back to do his own line. I thought that was really cool. I like Ken Foree. Just, like I said, it's a fun movie, but the original to me is always going to be the best of the best.
Absolutely.
So we'll briefly touch on Day of the Dead. 1985, Romero made his third one of this franchise, and it's become one of those movies, kind of like a Halloween 3, where people at the time, not because it had nothing to do with what it had to do with. It does follow zombies, and it follows in that story of the zombie apocalypse. But I feel like people didn't respect it as much when it came out. And it's now kind of grown more of a cult status over time. It led to Romero's first time where he had a zombie actually have a character, and this was Bub. I just rewatched this movie yesterday. It's still a lot of fun. It's very gory. My wife was sitting in the room. She's like, "Wow, this is really gross." I'm like, "Yeah, well," because then they, you know, Romero and Savini, when they do the guts and the blood pulling out, like, they don't miss anything. There's kidneys, there's intestines, and it's just bloody, gory fun. And that's how this movie is. Day of the Dead is it's not as good as the first two, but it's almost as good. It takes place in a military base where they're doing, like, tests and stuff on the zombies. There's, like, only 12 people on this base, and it's very isolated. And they start to, turn on each other and stuff, as you would have being in an enclosed space like that. But they're really starting to investigate why the zombies are what they are and if we can control them instead of defeating them, which is what the one girl, the main character, wants. But the crazy doctor, who they call Frankenstein, he wants to control them.
Well, one of the most interesting things in researching Day of the Dead, because I haven't seen this one in a long time, and I don't really recall a lot of it. So, Greg Nicotero plays John. And for those of you who are excited, hey, that name sounds familiar. The gifted SFX and makeup wizard for The Walking Dead.
And director, too. And he's a big-time director now for Creepshow as well on Shudder. Does a lot of special makeup effects. Him and Savini and a bunch of the other makeup effect guys back in the day. You know, it was kind of like a rock star thing back then. That's why they all kind of look the way they do now. They look like old aging rock stars, because that's what they were of the movie industry. They were the rock stars. They come in with their blood packs and their way to make cool people die. And it was kind of a moment back then. And Savini was kind of the start of it. And Nicotero and a bunch of the other guys came after or around the same time. I believe Nicotero came up under Savini, which is why he was in that movie. I believe that's what happened. I'd have to look into that, but.
Right. But just, The Hills Have Eyes. Obviously I talked about The Walking Dead, Tin City, The Island, just major, major character. Like, just, when you think about these movies and just, like, the look of everything, and just like, this guy right here. So the fact that he is in this movie, it just kind of makes me go, okay. You see how, I guess you call it the lineage. Like you said, he came up under Tom Savini.
Yeah.
And just, we're talking about, like, coaching franchises. He came from this coach's tree.
Yeah, right. It's the Tom Savini tree. There you go. It's the Tom Savini tree. I like that. I'm going to start using that. That's a good one. And
it fits.
Yeah, it does. And
there
Tom,
you go. Hashtag trendsetters. Woo.
Savini still has a school where he teaches people how to do this. It's something, obviously, that he loves to do. But what's cool, what we want to talk about next, Romero, when he made these movies, he was just making movies, and he was having a good time doing it. I don't think he envisioned that he would be a trendsetter and be like, zombies are cool. Then we get Return of the Living Dead, which kind of steals the name from Night of the Living Dead. It's more of a comedy zombie movie. And that's the thing, we get zombie comedies. We get zombies in our video games like Resident Evil and Doom. We get just more zombie movies over time. TV shows like The Walking Dead. Z Nation is another one that, Walking Dead's a franchise now. It's got like 3 shows.
Yeah.
But one of the big things that I mentioned video games, and that led to one of the biggest zombie franchises that we've had in film history, and that was the Resident Evil series.
Absolutely. Obviously started out as a video game, and I think, what was it, 1994, 96?
Something like that.
Sorry,
yeah.
I should have looked this up. But yeah, just survival horror in a video game. I remember playing this on the original PlayStation, and, as I've admitted, I am a coward when it comes to horror and stuff. I get freaked out in my own head. But this is one of the first games I remember being as scared as watching a movie, just because of the sound and walking through and fighting your way through things. I also, as I said, I am a coward, but I also love zombie games. We're talking on the video game aspect. Left 4 Dead.
Yep.
Multiplayer. Me and my niche group of buddies, Brian and Isaiah, we would sit and we would play these for like hours, almost felt like days straight. It's like the GoldenEye effect, like the James Bond on N64. That and you got Call of Duty, or I'm sorry,
Call of Duty. No, you're right. Call of Duty Zombies.
Nazi Zombies.
They did the Red Dead Zombie series as well. And basically, it seems like every game gets its own zombie spinoff that's just like a mini campaign or something like that.
Really, just going back to the Resident Evil films, which are much, much different. I know we've talked about Resident Evil already.
Yes.
But just, and I guess that's why some of the fan bases are kind of, there's people are split on this franchise because, those that are loyal to the game, the movies don't follow the game at all. But I think that these movies are fantastic. The first one in 2002, Mila Jovovich, Michelle Rodriguez, action-packed and just, government cover-ups. I don't want to, dwell too long on these ones, but what's interesting about this and what I really want to touch on is Resident Evil Extinction in 2007. Mila Jovovich again, Ali Larter, Odin Fear. This movie takes place during the day for a vast majority of it in the desert.
Yep.
So to make zombies, take them out of their, creepy night dark element and just like make them fast and make it happen in the daytime. I remember a really big action scene takes place in what used to be Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that they just, we're going in a completely different direction.
They kind of did Fast and the Furious before Fast and the Furious. They said, let's take this kind of small idea and we're going to just go around the world with it. And that's what they did. It became like a Resident Evil adventure film series, which I enjoyed. Now, I still stand that the first movie is the really true horror film of the series. But as it deals with zombies all the way through the entire series, the whole series is a horror series. The first one is just so cool because it's just set in that one facility. Yeah. And it's really just, it's more of an indie-style horror film in the way of, like, Night of the Living Dead, where obviously all these movies and video games take their inspiration from. And I think that was part of the inspiration for that movie was we're going to do what he did, but we're going to make it bloodier, we're going to make it bigger, we're going to make it better. And that's what they did. It was gory and just, but it takes place in such a small area, and I really like that. And then, the problem comes with, you can't do that again, right? So whether you like the rest of the movies or not, that's fine. That's your opinion. I like what they did with them. And the fact that they were like, we can't just do another room again where all these people die. We got to expand. So they took it out into the world, and they just made it a zombie apocalypse like Romero had done. And it was all over the world. It was happening everywhere. So Alice would basically go around the world fighting zombies, and I thought that was a cool idea. And it was fun. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most profitable video game franchises of all time when it comes to films. So it did something successfully, I think.
Right. And going back to the video games really quick, Resident Evil, the video games have also got criticized from moving away from the horror aspect of it being more action-adventure shooter.
Okay.
But in 2017, Resident Evil 7 actually went back. Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, because in Japan, that's what the title of the franchise is, Biohazard. And it really goes back to the survival horror aspect of it.
Cool.
Now, I haven't got a chance to play the game yet, but people rave about it, so I am actually looking forward to revisiting this game very soon, and just curious to see where it goes. Much like the movies, the video game went back to its roots as well.
Yes, so which is cool. All right, before we get into our zombie comedies that we want to talk about, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about two of the definitely inspired by George Romero zombie films that came out in the 2000s, and that's 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later. 28 Days Later was like, it's directed by Danny Boyle, starring Cillian Murphy and Naomi Harris. And it's just like a crazy slow burn movie in the first, maybe what, like 20 minutes? Dude wakes up naked in a hospital, doesn't know what's going on, walking around, and then bam, walks into zombies in this church. Doesn't know what's happening. He's on the run for his life, and it basically never stops until the end of the movie. And it's just this crazy movie that Danny Boyle did in the early 2000s that I think took zombie fans for a ride, and it really showed that art can still exist inside the zombie world too. Especially, like I said, horror films in the early 2000s, there weren't a lot to grab onto. This one, the first one especially, gave people something to be like, wow, this is something special that I'm seeing here. And I think it definitely led to the success of World War Z, which also used the fast zombies, which is something that Dawn of the Dead would then use, I think, about 2 years after 28 Days Later came out. Because I think 28 Days Later was 2002. Here, I have it right here, actually. Take a quick look. Yeah, 28 Days Later was 2002. So they started really the fast zombie trend. And then that's where you get to Dawn of the Dead, and that's where you get to World War Z, and it just kind of blew up from there. And it became popular for quite some time. The Walking Dead kind of made Walking Dead made slow zombies cool again, because that's what they used on that show, and people were like, hey, I remember when I used to like slow zombies. So then, so there's another genre within the zombie films, and that is zombie comedies. We've already alluded to this.
Yes.
In 2004, a couple of filmmakers, a director and his buddy, burst onto the scene. They'd already done a TV show in England, but they burst onto the scene, and it was called Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead is basically, I won't call it like, it's not a remake or it's not a spoof even really of Dawn of the Dead, but it takes a lot of its cues from Dawn of the Dead, and they are, in interviews and such, they've admitted that they are huge Romero fans, and that's what inspired them to write this movie. Starts out with Sean.
I would call it a comical homage.
Yes, which is basically all their movies. When you look at Hot Fuzz, the Cornetto trilogy, when you look at Hot Fuzz and At World's End, they're not spoofs of the genres. They pay tribute to the genres, and they do that in all three movies. In this one, specifically to zombies, there's a lot of moments that pay homage to Dawn of the Dead, even 28 Days Later, because that just came out 2 years prior. So they're, you know, trying to be very relevant with this movie, but also pay respect to the maestro, George A. Romero. And they do a hell of a job. And this movie has become a classic. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Edgar Wright have all become stars off of this movie. And it's basically had their careers skyrocketed. I mean, Edgar Wright's done a ton of stuff. We've talked about him before when we talked video game movies with Scott Pilgrim. And Nick Frost and Simon Pegg have a new show coming out on Amazon at the end of the month. So, like, these guys have ingrained themselves into society with just this movie. Now, granted, they've made other successful movies, which we both like, but this is what started it all. And this is something, too, my wife, like, when I showed her Hot Fuzz originally, when we went to see it in theaters, she's like, yeah, I really don't get what's so funny. But now she's seen Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz multiple times now, and she gets it, and she understands their humor, she gets why they're funny, and I think it's just taken time. It took time for some people to understand the comedy, because British humor is very broad, and it's not always easy for everybody to get, because it's very dry. But they do. Yes. They did it so well, and it's such a good movie. Every time I watch this movie, I just giggle with excitement and how good it was. And as a zombie fan, as a horror movie fan too, all the homages they do, it's so perfect. It's so good. And if you go, this is another one too, if you go back and watch it and you know a lot of British actors, you're going to be like, oh, that guy's in this movie, and that guy's in this movie. They cast a lot of British people that would eventually go on to be famous in other roles and movies and whatnot.
There you go. Bill Nighy. Nighy. Do we ever decide how we pronounce that?
I always say Bill Nighy, even though it's close. Nighy, it's okay. Like Bill Nighy the Science Guy, but I'm pretty sure that it could be Nahai or Nighy, I don't know. But yeah, Bill Nighy's in it. Not the Science Guy. It has
Bill Nighy, not the Science Guy.
Yeah, Bill Nighy, not the Science Guy. I think that's the best way to describe him. Rafe Spall.
I did not know that Chris Martin was in this movie, the lead singer from
Chris Martin. And then Bilbo Martin, what's his name? That guy. He's also in Hot Fuzz and At World's End too.
Martin Freeman.
Yeah, he's in it. He's the other Sean, basically, because the girl that they meet up in the middle of the movie, and there's the exact replica of each character. They meet up at the fence. Yeah, he's the male version of Sean's girlfriend, basically. The other woman they meet up with is a star of the show that Edgar Wright and Sean Pegg created called Spaced. So that was Simon Pegg and her were the stars of that show, Spaced. So they put her in this movie, too. Yeah, just a great cast, great story, lots of fun, lots of humor, very bloody. So if you're not into gore and you've never seen this movie, probably don't watch it, because it's pretty bloody in a funny way. Because there are some people that can't laugh at that. I think it's hilarious.
The fight scene at the Winchester with Queen playing in the background.
Oh, God, it's fantastic. Fantastic. So Shaun of the Dead would basically be would set the bar for zombie comedies. So in 2009, when this other movie came out, Zombieland, it was people were not sure how to take this movie, I think, when the trailer started happening. But Ruben Fleischer gave us kind of the, you know, I'll use him as an example because he's in the movie, but that Jesse Eisenberg style of humor that is very, I don't know if you would call it mumblecore or whatever kind of, I guess the best way to describe it is dry American humor. So, because it's not like, he's not laugh out loud funny all the time. It's just his little tics and the little things that he does that make Jesse Eisenberg funny. And the same things that make Michael Cera funny, which is why they often get confused with each other. But I mean, I think the main bright spot of Zombieland was obviously Woody Harrelson as Tallahassee and yes. The very brash man character who has to be this, you know, have this bravado that makes him the alpha male. Right. But we all see the movie. We all realize that he really isn't as alpha as he thinks he is. And that's kind of the joke of the movie. Also Emma Stone and Abigail Breslin, great in this movie. Bill Murray, that was what people were talking about, the Bill Murray cameo, because everybody loves Bill Murray, and this movie uses him perfectly, and he is fantastic in it. Zombieland was great. It was another movie. It ingrained itself in society, and when it came out, I think people were surprised that a sequel wasn't rushed into production. But as the way it is now, we get sequels about a decade later. So about a decade later, we get Zombieland 2. Which, in my opinion, and Wayne and you and I saw this together, I thought it was just as good. I thought it was a lot of fun. Yep. The characters were still the characters, even 10 years later, and I like how they played it. Like, a lot has happened in the 10 years. Abigail's character has grown up. Jesse Eisenberg's character and Emma Stone have kind of grown closer together, but then also further apart, as we see throughout the movie. Zoe Deutsch was a great addition to this cast. She was hilarious in this movie. It was fun to have, just like in Shaun of the Dead, where we get the opposite of all the Shaun of the Dead characters, we get the opposite of Tallahassee and Eisenberg's character, played by Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch, who are the opposite of Tallahassee and Columbus. We get the new character, Nevada, played by Rosario Dawson, who is great, and Rosario Dawson is really great in pretty much most things she's in. Nice addition to the cast, as I said. Zoe Deutsch as Madison, I thought was really funny. Her character is described as a dumb blonde, but don't be fooled. She does a lot more with that character than I think most people would have, and it really leads to a lot of some of the funnier parts of that movie. So if you haven't seen these two movies, check it out. This is going to lead us, though, into our review of the week. We reviewed the movie Little Monsters, not to be confused with the Fred Savage, Howie Mandel movie, also called Little Monsters. So hopefully, Wayne, you didn't watch that one by accident. You'd be like, well, I don't know why I want to talk about this one.
When we were talking about what we were going to review, I'm like, Little Monsters isn't a zombie movie, bro. It's like almost 30 years old. What are you doing? But once I figured out what exactly we were talking about and found it on Hulu, I sat down and I loved all hour and 40 minutes of it.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We'll start off right there. Little Monsters. Abe Forsyth directed it, written by Abe Forsyth as well, starring the lovely Lupita Nyong'o, Alexander Englund, Cat Stewart, Diesel Laturaca, great name, and Josh Gad. I believe Diesel was the kid in the movie. Josh Gad is pretty hilarious. Beginning is David and his girlfriend fighting and arguing and hating each other and breaking up eventually, which then leads him to go live with his sister, played by Cat Stewart, named Tess. And she has a kid named Felix, and Dave is kind of an a-hole. And that's kind of what he's a man-child. Basically, picture any role that Will Ferrell plays. That's what Dave is. And he doesn't know how to grow up. He thinks that his girlfriend left him because she's a bitch, but in reality, he's the reason that she left. It leads to some funny moments, but it ends up leading him to going on a field trip with his nephew's kindergarten class because he finds the teacher, Miss Caroline, attractive. And that's played by Oscar winner Lupita Nyong'o. Him and her end up in the middle of basically a zombie, not a mini zombie apocalypse, I will say. We find out there's a U.S. military base, and this takes place in Australia. next to a U.S. military base, there's this, like, zoo, and that's the zoo they're going to. Well, at the military base, they're testing on zombies and seeing if they could make people come back to life or what. They really don't go into a lot of detail into that. You really don't need it. All you need to know is that they're trying to do something with zombies, and the zombies break out. That's what happens. So Carol,
it's damn government's fault. I'll
exactly. Miss Audrey Caroline, who she keeps telling David to call her Audrey, even though he keeps calling her Miss Caroline, because I think she feels like he's an adult male. He shouldn't have to call her by her last name. Mm-hmm. And it kind of unfolds. So they're in this tractor thing, and then Dave and Miss Caroline see the first of the zombies that we meet. And it's a zombie comedy, as we've been talking about. It's pretty damn funny. And things unfold, obviously. They got to protect the kids. That's their main goal, is to protect the kids that they're with. And one of the most interesting parts is played by Josh Gad. I want to get his character just right here, so give me a second.
Teddy McGiggles.
Teddy McGiggles, yes. Also Nathan Schneider, but he is known by Teddy McGiggles. He's a TV kid star that the kids love. He has a puppet that he talks to. He happens to be going on a tour through Australia. He's an American at the time, and he meets up with these kids that are huge fans of his. He also finds Miss Caroline attractive and hits on her and whatnot. Lupita Nyong'o in this movie or in any movie can't do any wrong. She's great from start to finish. She's fantastic as the very nice and neat and cute teacher who then, there are moments where she has to flip that switch, as we talk about, like, in football. You gotta flip that switch and be ready, where she shows her not-so-nice side. And her not-so-nice side is pretty damn hilarious, if you ask me. And she...
Let the butt-kickery begin.
Yes. Wow. And all she needed was a shovel. So you cut, like, you kind of get this, you're caught between, like, this really nice person and this person who will do everything she can to protect these kids, including take out zombies, threaten other people. And it's really fun to watch her play this type of role, I think. What I've loved about her...
fantastic.
Yeah, what I loved about her career so far is you see her in 12 Years a Slave, a very depressing movie, very hard role for her to do, I'm sure. But then since then, like, and it was great, she was great in that movie. But since then, she's taken on all these roles that require her to play so many different types of characters. Last year, and she was in Jordan Peele's Us, where she played two characters, which was I thought was fantastic, and... Yep. They should have Oscar nominated her for that one. They missed the mark on that one. But then she gets this movie, and you're kind of like, oh, it's just a zombie comedy. She plays a school teacher, not kind of knowing what to expect, but she just goes out and she gives it her all. You could tell, like, as we talked about Philip Seymour Hoffman a couple weeks ago, she's one of those actresses that just gives her all to every role. And I think it's fun to just watch her play in this sandbox a little bit with the zombie comedy type of movie. And we get a really just fun, kind of sweet movie. If you could believe that, a zombie movie is sweet because it has a heart to it. And it's just, and we get a lot of Taylor Swift songs, which was an interesting choice for them to use. And then also Umba.
Let's not forget the Hanson fanatic that she is.
Yes,
well,
she is a Hanson fanatic, and that gets brought up. And that part was pretty hilarious when they got to that.
One of the things I just want to touch on really quick, and what I feel is kind of like missed the mark with Miss Nyong'o's career. She was fantastic as Maz Kanata.
Yes.
In the first Star Wars remake, The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of never really hear from her again in the next two movies. And that just feels... It really disappointed me because that character and her performance were so intriguing.
It was a...
And,
yeah.
I don't know.
It was a waste of her time.
When we get to Star Wars, and you'll hear a lot more of my opinions on this.
But it was definitely really a waste of her talent, I think.
Going back to just this movie and how wholesome and uplifting her character is, Josh Gad's character, Teddy McGiggle, is just the complete opposite.
He is literally the worst.
Are you familiar with Death to Smoochie?
Yeah.
Drawing connections from Teddy McGiggle to Rainbow Randall and Death to Smoochie, just right there, they're just like, they're supposed to be wholesome children and entertainment, and really in real life their characters are just dirtbags.
Yes, exactly. And that happens with a lot of movies or TV shows, but like child entertainers. You know, they usually are a-holes, and he plays it really well. It's fun to see Josh Gad kind of go all in on that because he's not normally that type of character. It was, a fun role probably for him to play. A lot of cussing in front of five-year-olds. I'm sure that was shot, you know, discreetly, so that didn't actually happen the way that we saw it. But it does happen quite often in that movie. But yeah, so if you're interested in Little Monsters, it is available on Hulu. It's been available since, I think, earlier this year when it came out. It's a really fun zombie movie, comedy. So if you really like zombie comedies and you're looking for something new to watch, I definitely recommend checking it out.
Absolutely. Especially with it being October. Come on, y'all are missing
the yes.
golden opportunity at a fantastically entertaining film.
All right, so moving right along, we're going to go to Gone But Not Forgotten. We're going to talk about the late George Romero and what he kind of has brought to horror. But first, let me talk about the people that passed away this week. We'll give our respect out to them. Yuko Takagi. She was only 40 years old, famed Japanese actor. She was known for The Ring, Ringu, and Miss Sherlock, which was an HBO show that was originally aired in Japan, but they aired it on HBO. I guess it became very popular. And then Helen Reddy, who was the I Am Woman singer, which is a very famous song used in movies, and they actually, I believe, made a movie about her recently. She passed away at the age of 78. So rest in peace to both of them. But now we're going to talk about George A. Romero. Romero is one of those filmmakers who I was introduced to through Night of the Living Dead. That was probably the first movie of his that I saw, and it's a great movie. And he, you know, we talk about legends and what they do and how they're remembered. And a lot of the horror film director talk, you know, is in the 70s with Tobe Hooper for Chainsaw and John Carpenter for Halloween and Wes Craven for Last House on the Left and Steven Spielberg for Jaws. But it really started in 1968, and I'm sure people, you know, there'll be people coming on here telling me that James Whale and stuff like that. And it started, they're right, it started years ago. But for modern horror fans, I think it started in 1968, and that was with Romero's Night of the Living Dead. And he's gone on to make some classic films, The Crazies, which was also gotten a remake. A lot of his movies have been remade, so that should tell you something as well. Martin, a very underrated vampire movie. Creepshow. We'll talk Creepshow a little bit. Creepshow was kind of what made anthologies popular, especially in the horror world. It's one of the first of its kind. Him and Stephen King had this idea to do like short stories as a horror film, and they did it, and it was successful. It spawned into its own anthology TV series on Shudder right now, which a bunch of horror icons have gotten together and started directing episodes of that show. Kind of like an American Horror Story for you millennials, if you don't know what Creepshow is. And that was very successful. So he kind of dabbled in a lot of things. He didn't just do zombie movies, but he was known as the zombie guy because his zombie movies were so good and recognizable. Also, Tales from the Dark Side, he had a hand in that. That's another anthology series. The Dark Half. This is one of those movies, to me, that completely underrated. Stephen King movie. Timothy Hutton. He plays two characters. He writes this character in his book who then ends up coming to life. And it's just so cool on how Romero was able to kind of blend the story of the book and this film together. And Timothy Hutton gives a great performance. It's definitely an underrated Romero flick that I think people should check out. We'd be obviously remiss if we didn't mention that he not only did he do more zombie movies, but he actually continued the Night of the Living Dead series, did Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, and Survival of the Dead. I love Land of the Dead. I think it's a fantastic movie. It holds up, I think, with the rest of the franchise. Diary was okay, and I still haven't seen Survival because I heard it was bad. But I own it, and I haven't watched it yet. So maybe this month I'll watch it because of all the horror movies I'm watching. Wayne, go ahead.
I didn't know that he was aware, or I wasn't aware that he wrote Season of the Witch, 1972. And I know there have been a few different versions of that have come out.
Mm-hmm. One with the great Nick Cage.
Yeah, you know, that one really one of the rare times where that one didn't hit the mark for me.
So. Yeah.
When we talked about just the trees that people come from, like, you know, Tom Savini and George Romero. You know, these guys are definitely in the same orchard.
Yes.
Tree orchard. Is what there. And I know when he passed away in 2017, he wasn't going to get, and I felt he wasn't going to get the recognition and acknowledgement that he deserved.
I agree.
And I remember when it happened, we touched base just because, you know, we both knew just the role that he had in just this genre, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You being the big, you know, horror fan and how influential he has been, you knowing that I am a big zombie fan, just knowing that, hey, we need to acknowledge this loss. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, he started a genre, basically. I mean, he started a genre that has never really gone. They've been different, obviously, types of zombie films over the 60 years since he started this whole thing. But
yep.
Elements from Night of the Living Dead have made it in, I would argue, into every zombie TV show and movie since then. Now, everyone goes in a different direction. They make fast zombies. They make slow zombies. They make zombies that can learn, zombies that can talk. We didn't mention Warm Bodies with Nicholas Holt. That's a zombie rom-com. So they've taken the zombie idea and turned it into so many different things. Disney has a musical called Zombies. It's about zombies and like werewolves, like fighting, like kind of like a
iZombie,
the TV show where it's a detective series. Like they've taken this zombie thing and gone in so many different places with it, and it's all because of him. And it's kind of cool when you look at his old movies and you rewatch Dawn, Night or Day or Land or Diary. Or survival, that he had a hand in creating this genre in itself. Genre within a genre, if you will.
While we're just talking about stuff and influence and whatnot, do you remember the 1999 film Idle Hands?
Oh, I love Idle Hands.
Devin Sawa, Seth Green, Eldon Hansen, Jessica Alba.
Yep.
Vivica A. Fox. Yeah, man, just, you know, it's not a zombie movie per se, but obviously... Seth Green and Eldon Hansen, just, you know, has like the bro zombie, just kind of like, hey, what's going on?
They take again, and that's another thing, inspiration from Romero, and the fact that they can, you know, zombies can talk to people in certain elements. Now, he never took it that far, but he does show you definitely in Day and Land that zombies are learning; they're able to listen, and which is something interesting that. Even a lot of directors today haven't taken from him. But like I said, something like Warm Bodies definitely touches on that because the zombies are like, they're like people still, but they're zombies. Like he's got inner thought. Remember, Nicholas Hoult's character's got the inner thought, but he doesn't have like the outer speaking until towards the end. So it just shows you too, in a genre too, where people, you can make a really bad zombie movie by not really caring about your characters. And what Romero showed us is that if you put a lot into the characters, you'll have a really great movie, which is why something like Walking Dead really works. People complain about it a lot that there isn't enough zombie stuff on it, but in order to have a TV show that's lasted for over 10 seasons, you have to have character, and you have to have characters that you root for and that you like. And all of that, like I said, that comes from what Romero started. And you can definitely see what Nick Otero does with Walking Dead, that there's a lot of homage paying to Romero in those episodes. And it's great to kind of see his legacy live on through that show, which I know is ending soon, but they've got two other shows with that. So it'll keep living on, the Walking Dead series. And someone else will come along and take from Romero and make something. Maybe they'll make a Night of the Living Dead TV series, which would be kind of cool. Hollywood, if you're listening.
Absolutely.
So, anything else you want to say about Romero, Wayne?
No, just, you know, gone but not forgotten.
Yep.
Incredibly thankful for his contributions. And
he was an inspiration, I think. And that's, you know, a lot of people learn from him. And he taught a lot of people how to make movies and how to make them right. And I think that was big. It was something like over the years... I understand what you're saying, like when he passed, that he didn't get the respect he deserved. It was because over the years in the film industry, he kept getting a little respect. Not much throughout, you know. It was the people in the horror community that he got his respect from, and we are the ones that kind of hold him up to like, hey, don't forget about George Romero. And like I said last week, Wes Craven passing away, I think first kind of made people, when Romero and Hooper died in the same year, were like, yeah, well, You know, they're not Wes Craven, so, but they were in a sense. They started something too, Hooper with Chainsaw Massacre. So like all these guys that have lived in this industry and in the horror world have started something, and to have it last and after you've gone, you know, to have his legacy be after he has passed, I think is something that we all kind of aspire to. All right, so moving on to what we've watched this week. I'm going to start off with my, if you've been following me on social media, you'll know that I've done the 31 Days of Halloween again. Last year, I called it 31 Days of Horror. This year, 31 Days of Halloween, whatever. I don't really care. But I'll start with the first ones I've watched so far. I've got one I still got to watch today, but I've done three so far. October 1st was Ready or Not with Samara Weaving. I've talked about this movie before. It's fantastic. It's great. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen it and you have HBO or HBO Max, check it out. You will enjoy it. It's so good. She's great in it. The cast is fantastic. Great supporting cast. Fantastic movie. October 2nd, I did 12-hour shift. It was okay. It's not great. It was supposed to be a horror comedy. I didn't really find a lot of horror in it. There is a lot of gore and stuff, so maybe that's where that plays into it a little bit. Angela Bettis, though, from the movie May, she's in it. She's fantastic. Then yesterday, as we talked about, I watched Day of the Dead. So that was my third one. Classic Romero movie. Check it out. It's really good. Bub the Zombie is probably one of the highlights. Everyone loves Bub the Zombie because he's a character. And he learns like to kind of like talk and shoot guns and stuff. So then yesterday, I also watched two documentaries. One was American Murder and The Family Next Door. And it's about Chris Watts, real monster, who killed his family and tried to blame his wife that she killed the kids and then he killed her when he found her. It's a mess. It's a really good movie, but it's very depressing. If you don't like watching depressing stuff, it uses a lot of footage from his wife's like Facebook page and Instagram and stuff like that. Real heart-wrenching stuff. The other one I watched was, and that's on Netflix, the other one I watched was Tread, also on Netflix. This one, Wayne, is an interesting one. It's about a guy who thinks this town has done him wrong. And they've...
Yeah, I saw this recently, too.
Did you? Okay, so I was listening to a podcast, the Movie Crypt podcast, with Adam Green and Joe Lynch, and they had Paul Salad on, who's the director, and he's a buddy of theirs. And this movie is so crazy. If you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. Just the buildup.
Yeah, well, it completely flips the narrative, you know what I mean?
It does, because at the beginning you're totally like, oh, like, yeah, this guy had a reason to get pissed off, and then by the end of the movie you're just like, well, that's not cool. like that shouldn't have been how it happened. Just the idea that he built this giant tank without anybody actually noticing him and then just drove it out. Look up the story, people, if you haven't heard about this movie. He then drives it through the town and just like wreaks havoc. It's a crazy story. They talk about in the movie how it didn't get talked about because Ronald Reagan died the very next day. So it was a big story for one day, and then Reagan passed away, and it kind of just got buried after that. It's a crazy movie.
Think Falling Down, Michael Douglas, 1993.
And that's exactly how Joe Lynch described it on the Movie Crypt podcast when he was talking about it. He's like, he goes, how you said, they kind of switched the narrative. He goes, it's like when you're watching Falling Down and you get to the end of the movie and you realize that Michael Douglas is actually the bad guy. And that's exactly how this movie works. It's that same sense of like, oh man, I'm behind this guy. And then you get to that flip and you're like, oh no. Like, what? No, dude, don't do that. Very interesting movie. Very interesting documentary. They did recreate the killdozer, which I believe is what they called. Now, he didn't kill anybody. You'll have to watch the movie to see how it happened, but there was no murder in this, so you'll kind of, just so that you have that going in so you don't think, well, why would people like this guy who killed a bunch of people? He didn't kill anybody, but it was just this crazy story of this guy who felt like he was wronged, and he knew, he made a manifesto on cassette tapes, which the director has, and he plays it throughout, that's his narrative throughout the entire movie, and it's really cool. Paul Sillette's a really cool director. He did the horror film Grace. That was his first movie. This is his first documentary, and I thought he did a really good job with it.
And, I mean, he didn't just go nuts and, you know, take out vengeance on this town. I mean, it's a gray area for sure.
It is, yes.
There were some shady things that happened to this man, but Watch Tread. Watch the documentary. You'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's really,
I'm really glad you brought this up because I watched this about 6 weeks ago and kind of forgot about it.
Yeah. Good movie. All right, Wayne, you're up.
All right. I am currently watching Cursed. What's her name?
Merlin. Kathleen Langford.
Kathryn Langford stars as Nimue in this retelling of the classic tale Sword in the Stone with King Arthur and Excalibur and Lady of the Lake. I'm about 5 episodes in. It feels like a modern, like a more up-to-date Lord of the Rings. It's beautifully shot. Or when I say Lord of the Rings, like medieval-type swordplay and whatnot. Just a lot of fun. Can't really say much about it because it's going to start giving stuff away, but if you like fantasy and action and spells and whatnot, and woodland creatures, definitely check out Cursed. It is very, very worth it. I also started watching Sons of Anarchy again.
Nice.
As Michael knows, and he's a big fan of the show as well, this is definitely in my top 5 favorite shows of all time. So just...
Agreed.
Stumbled across it on Hulu. I'm like, all right, go time. But one of the things that I want to talk about documentary-wise, I finally got around to watching Abducted in Plain Sight. 2017 documentary on Netflix centers around 1974, 12-year-old Jan Broberg is abducted from a small church-going community in Idaho by a trusted neighbor and close family friend. This is unreal how this man manipulates this entire family. Watching this, it's like a car wreck is the way I can the only way I can describe it. You can't look away and you can't stop, but the whole time you're going, are you kidding me?
It's very much a movie where you say, how are these people real?
Seeing the naivete of these two parents and how they are just very easily talked into and manipulated by this man.
Yeah.
And just, wow. Watch this. It's about an hour and a half of your time. Hour and 31 minutes, yeah. But very interesting, but also head-scratching at the same time.
Yes, agreed.
Other than that, not really got too much else going on entertainment-wise. So,
all right. So this week for recommendations, I'm going to recommend, since it's October, you go to Amazon Prime if you have it, and you watch movies like Crawl from last year, the alligator movie. Very good. Night of the Demons, The Relic, Silent Hill, which we talked about in our video game episode. I See You. It's a new movie with Helen Hunt. I really like that movie. It's a good like horror thriller. Hatchet. Love Hatchet. Slasher comedy franchise. Fantastic. Fright Night, the original. Really good. The Woods from Lucky McKee. That is on Amazon Prime. I really recommend that movie. It's got a small kind of cameo role from Bruce Campbell in it. The Lords of Salem from Rob Zombie. Underrated movie from him. Hereditary is still on there. Phantasm. The Child's Play remake, We Are Still Here is a fantastic indie horror film. Strangers Pray at Night is really good. Is a really good slasher film. Wishmaster, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Better Watch Out, Cabin in the Woods, great horror comedy. Midsummer, Wayne and I differ on that one. Resident Evil, Resident Evil, the first one is actually on Amazon Prime. So a movie we just talked about today, you can go watch it right now and should. Secret Window, Overlord is another one I wanted to mention today, and I did not. That's another zombie movie. Really good World War II zombie film. Lots of fun. Kurt Russell's kid is in that one. Just go over to Amazon Prime and look up horror films. There's a lot of good stuff in there that you could watch this month. All right, so we're going to move on to the last part of the podcast, which is news and notes, which there are a lot this week. A lot of decisions made and things happening. All right, we'll start with Lion King sequel from Oscar winner Barry Jenkins. He won the Oscar for adapted screenplay for Moonlight. So even though that movie didn't seem to really get a lot of good reviews, The Lion King, it made a lot of money, so they're making a sequel. Netflix developing live-action Conan the Barbarian series. Oscar Isaac cast as Francis Ford Coppola, and Jake Gyllenhaal cast as producer Robert Evans in a film about the making of The Godfather, directed by Barry Levinson. Disney and Marvel cast newcomer Iman Vellani as Kamala Khan in the Miss Marvel TV show, which will be on Disney+. Arrow and Bloody Disgusting are launching their own horror-based streaming apps, which I'm very excited about. Nightbreed becoming a series created by Krampus, Godzilla King of Monsters, and Trick or Treat director Michael Dougherty. Francis Ford Coppola, speaking of him, is releasing a new edit of Godfather Part 3 in December, so that'll be interesting because everyone hates Godfather Part 3. Greenland with Gerard Butler is now heading to HBO Max in early 2021 due to COVID. It'll be one of those premiere VOD movies, I believe, in about a month or two that you could pay like $20 to rent, or you could just wait till the beginning of 2021 and watch it on HBO Max. It's still in theaters around the world as well, but will debut on HBO Max, like I said, next year. Jamie Foxx is returning as Electro in Tom Holland's Spider-Man 3, which is very interesting because Jamie Foxx is in Amazing Spider-Man 2 with Andrew Garfield. So this may play into the multiverse or the other universes type thing that they're going to do. They haven't really revealed how they're doing it, but he's coming back. Very interesting. Guy Ritchie turning The Gentleman into a TV series. Gentleman was his movie from this year, but Matthew McConaughey and Charlie Hunnam. It was a very good movie. And Cobra Kai Season 3 finally announced January 8th, and it has also been renewed for a fourth season. So big news there.
Outstanding.
Yes. Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, coming to Netflix via Ryan Murphy. It'll be a TV limited series. Ryan Murphy has created Ratched and Hollywood for Netflix, as well as American Horror Story for FX. One last thing I want to talk about of the news section is that we have lots of movies being pushed back because of COVID and the theater crisis. No Time to Die is now moved back to April again of next year. Fast 9 moves back to May 28th of next year. And Wonder Woman 2 has been pushed back to Christmas. People aren't going to the movies yet. I just read right before we get on this podcast that Regal and one other theater are shutting it down because of No Time to Die being pushed back. I think people thought Tenet was going to bring everybody back, and then when that didn't work, they thought maybe Wonder Woman, but then that was pushed back to Christmas. So then they were hoping for No Time to Die. Well, No Time to Die has been pushed back again. So this whole movie theater crisis thing is getting bigger and bigger. We're going to, as I just mentioned with Greenland, we're going to start seeing more and more big-budget movies thrown to streaming services. We just saw it with Milan. It's just going to keep happening. And I don't know what the theater landscape is going to look like when this is over, because this has kind of ravaged the movie industry. And I know, you know, there are obviously much bigger things to worry about, but as two movie fans, this is just something that we're going to talk about because it's big to us. You know, we loved going to the movies. We liked being the first in line to see something opening weekend, and that just isn't happening right now. So if you can go to the drive-ins and you can go safely, I say go, because the drive-ins are a pretty safe place to go see movies. We're all going out in public, going to stores and stuff. Obviously, people are not wanting to go to the movie theaters, so that's something that the industry is going to have to take a look at and see what their next step is going to be, and it's going to be a big decision on their hands. All right, so for movies and TV shows, we got a couple surprises. The Kraft Legacy. So The Kraft Legacy was originally told that we were told it was originally in a remake of The Kraft. I love The Kraft, so I was excited about this. I wanted to see what they were going to do with the remake. Well, they surprised us. Zoe Lister-Jones, who directed this movie, they released the trailer, and it is a sequel, a direct sequel to the original movie. And it's skipping theaters and going straight to premiere VOD a la Bill and Ted, October 28th. So we'll be able to see it very quickly. That could spell doom for the movie. I don't know. Sometimes, but in this day and age, I don't think you can just make that assumption, because movies are getting shoved to PVOD because of the crisis. It'll be $19.99 to rent it, but it's $24.99 to purchase it. So unlike some of the other Universal movies, you will be able to buy it right away. If you're someone like me and think that $20 to rent a movie is a little too much, but if I want to buy it, $24.99 is not that, $5 more, not that much more expensive.
You're going to spend more than that when you go to the theater to see it.
Exactly, right? So His House is a horror film about immigrants that hits Netflix October 30th. Another surprise here. A Borat sequel was secretly filmed and is coming to Amazon Prime October 23rd. Sacha Baron Cohen has been working on his Showtime TV show, surprising a lot of people like Mike Pence and whatnot. he made a whole movie, and it's a sequel to Borat. So that'd be kind of cool to see what it looks like. It'll be free for everybody who has Amazon Prime. I'm sure it'll be available to rent and buy for people that don't. So check, look for that October 23rd. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is Chadwick Boseman's final movie, hits Netflix on December 18th, starring him and Viola Davis, directed by Denzel Washington. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Story, starring Forest Whitaker and Keegan-Michael Key, hits Netflix November 13th. And another surprise, The Witch's remake, which was supposed to be in theaters with Anne Hathaway, directed by Robert Zemeckis, is going straight to HBO Max on October 22nd. So there's another treat for horror fans. If you like the original Witches, I believe it's still on Netflix. Check it out there. And this one will be another one based off of Roald Dahl's book. So that's our show for this week. We already know what we're doing next week. We're going to have our another guest come next week. Hopefully we'll be able to get the audio working better on that episode. Sorry to anybody that listened and thought the audio wasn't great. We had a bad connection with Scott, but it was hard to kind of stop and keep going and all at the same time. So we'll try to work out the kinks. Hopefully our guest will have a good time. We're going to be talking about the Child Play series, which is one of my favorites, and I think kind of the bastard child of the horror genre when it comes to franchises.
It's definitely the redheaded stepchild.
Ooh, I like what you did there. So if you're enjoying this, keep listening. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff, talking a lot of cool horror movies this month, and then we got some ideas for November and December and stuff like that. So it's been a lot of fun so far. We appreciate the listeners. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact us. Have any ideas for us to talk about, let us know. We'll gladly listen. I know we talked about a website and web pages and stuff. We'll still be working on that. I do have a job, so it's going to be a little harder for me to get that stuff going as quick as I wanted to. But I promise we will get that stuff going. Thank you again.
Absolutely.
And hopefully you all have a great week.
Bye, everybody. Take care and keep listening. We appreciate it very much.